It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Greetings. Anon Radio, it is 1900 UTC, and so it's time to get into some news. There's so much going on. I got a lot of world news for us today. Just check, peek in, make sure I didn't miss anything. All right. Well, first up, just go ahead here. Press Control Shift O to open up my bookmarks. I got to my desk right on time, but unfortunately I didn't get to load my bookmarks. All right. Well, we're going to start off with our favorite.
World news.
Okay, let's do this. We're going to start off here with The Guardian. Colombia, spying on reporters shows army unable to shake habits of dirty war. So Maria Alejandra Valamirazar has found a front row seat of Colombia's civil conflict. Over a 25-year career, she's reported from rebel-held jungles to territories controlled by violent drug cartels. She also worked as an advisor to several presidents during successive attempts to make peace. But she recently discovered that her work had put her in the crosshairs of the military. An investigation by the local news weekly Semana found that Colombian army gathered intelligence on Villamirazar and more than 130 of her colleagues, including at least three U.S. reporters. Soldiers trawled through information on social media in order to build profiles on each target, with comprehensive lists of their contacts, families, and friends. Their political leanings were deduced from their posts and connections and logged in a database. So, scandal revealed that despite a peace deal which led to the demobilization of the country's largest rebel group, Colombia's U.S.-backed military are still unable to shake habits from a dirty war in which the rules that usually bind a democracy's armed forces are non-binding, and journalists and opposition members are considered fair targets. It's pretty exciting stuff. Pretty big news coming out of there. What this shows is that the army has never known how to fight a clean war, said Villamizar. They don't know how to stand on the side of civilians or even what their role is in Colombia. So this is very interesting. It's a great article. Like I said, it's at The Guardian. If you want to hang out or chat and talk about the news, you are free to do so. There is a channel called Anon Radio and Com. You just jump over to SDF and type COM, hit enter, G for go to, type Anon Radio and hit enter or return, and then you'll find yourself in the room. But yeah, so anyway, if you want to talk, show up. Greetings, X1. Glad to see you here. So let's keep on a rolling. So this is about Iran. The U.S. and from France 24, the United States on Monday imposed new sanctions on individuals and entities involved in Iran's nuclear missile and conventional arms programs to support its assertion that all U.N. sanctions against Tehran are now resumed. The announcement came in defiance of nearly all U.N. members, including U.S. allies in Europe, who've rejected U.S. legal standing to impose the international sanctions. It set the stage for an ugly showdown at the annual U.N. General Assembly this week, and also came as Donald Trump seeks to portray himself as a champion for Middle East stability ahead of November's presidential election. In addition to his action against Iran, Trump just last week witnessed the signing of an agreement normalizing relations between Israel and the UAE and Bahrain, both of which reflect increasing regional concerns about Iran. Similar U.S. brokered deals between Israel and Arab states are expected in the coming days and weeks. The United States has now restored U.N. sanctions on Iran, Trump said in a statement issued shortly after he signed an executive order spelling out how the U.S. will enforce the snapback of the sanctions. My actions today send a clear message to the Iranian regime and those in the international community who refuse to stand up to Iran. Sanctions include a freeze on any assets in U.S. jurisdictions held by those targeted and exclude Americans from doing business with them, and perhaps most importantly, opens up foreign governments, companies, and individuals to U.S. penalties if they engage in transactions with them. Speaking to reporters alongside fellow cabinet secretaries at the State Department, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the administration was hitting more than two dozen Iranian individuals and institutions with penalties. No matter who you are, if you violate the U.N. arms embargo on Iran, you risk sanctions. However, nearly all of the targets identified, including the Iranian Defense Ministry, Iran's, and several... Oh, sorry. They're just basically saying these everyone that they labeled were already subject to U.S. sanctions, and the administration had reimposed after Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal in 2018. So nothing new there. The article goes on. This is France 24 if you want to look it up. The article goes on to kind of give some more details about it. But in general, the U.S. is acting unilaterally again and just saying that it's doing stuff with the U.N. When it's not. Which is not a big surprise if you followed how the political environment in the U.S. is these days. let's see. Here, I'll turn it up. Boop. And then go over here. And boop. Sound settings. And this should be the only one. Let's just mess with that a little bit. Alright, I've adjusted my gain on my microphone, so hopefully that helps. If not, we'll play with it again tomorrow. Sorry to see you go, F. Fuentes. Alright, so let's keep on rolling. We've got so much international news. It's going to take a second to get through. All right. So this is over there in the UK. This is from the World Socialist website, wsws.org. Johnson's government says UK COVID-19 infections could hit 50,000 per day as pandemic spins out of control. Coronavirus infections could reach 50,000 a day within weeks, with 200 deaths a day by November. Chris Whitty, England's chief medical officer, and Sir Patrick Vallance, chief scientific advisor to the Johnson government, warned yesterday. Whitty and Vallance gave a televised address following discussions with cabinet ministers over the weekend. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is to chair a meeting of the government's COBRA Emergency Committee today, followed by a cabinet meeting. He is then expected to make a televised policy speech on the COVID-19 crisis. Following the statements of Whitty and Vallance, the UK's chief medical officers of England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland moved the COVID-19 alert level from level 3 to level 4, stating, after a period of lower COVID cases and deaths, the number of cases are now rising rapidly and probably exponentially in significant parts of all four nations. Level 4 means the virus is in general circulation, transmission is high, or rising exponentially. The only level above this, level 5, poses the material risk of healthcare services being overwhelmed. Another 4,368 new infections and 11 deaths were recorded, with the number of cases requiring ventilation in England doubling in 8 days to 154. So, good wishes to the UK, but if they're following the rest of the world's model, it's gonna get bad. Let's go on over here and jump to the BBC and get something a little more lighthearted, because gosh, that's depressing. So this is funny. Internet. Old TV caused village broadband outages for 18 months. So this is over in Wales. This is from an unnamed householder in Aberhosen Powys. I had to look it up in Google and it says it's in Wales. But it was unaware that the old set would emit a signal which would interfere with the entire village's broadband. After 18 months, engineers began an investigation after a cable replacement program failed to fix the issue. The embarrassed householder promised not to use the television again. The village now has a stable broadband signal. So this is pretty cool. So what happened was, the householder would switch their TV set on at 7 a.m. every morning, and electrical interference emitted by their secondhand television was affecting the broadcast signal. The owner, who does not want to be identified, was mortified to find out that their old TV was causing the problem. They immediately agreed to switch it off and not use it again. Engineers walked around the village with a monitor called a spectrum analyzer to find any electrical noise to help pinpoint the problem. Yeah, it's pretty wild. Our device picked up a large burst of electrical interference in the village. It turned out that at 7 a.m. every morning, the occupant would switch on their old TV, which would in turn knock out broadband for the village. The TV was found to be emitting a single high-level impulse noise, shine, which causes electrical interference in other devices. Mr. Jones said the problem has not returned since the fault was identified. So, Susan Rutherford, Open Research Chief Engineer Lead for Wales, said anything with electrical components, from outdoor lights to microwaves, could potentially have an impact on broadband connections. We just advise the public to make sure their electrical appliances are properly certified and meet current standards. So pretty wild. Hey, greeting, Jazzmaz. Yes, it's pretty cool. And then this article got picked up. Some people on Reddit were talking about it, and a guy shared a story about how their industrial installant was having an issue, and they couldn't find what was knocking it out. And come to find out, the street lights that were running along out the outside, whenever they kicked on, they were emitting a bunch of RF noise that would knock everything offline while they were powering it. So, pretty wild, right? Okay, well, we've got 4 stories to go, and then we'll play a song because, golly, there's a lot of internet, a lot of international news still to go. It's almost like there's a world outside of the United States. It's hard for me to believe, but apparently there's more than Texas in the world. All right, so this is from France 24 again. Australian rescuers are working to save the whale stranded on Tasmania. We mentioned them yesterday, and they were like, well, we'll wait and see. Well, they waited. Now they've decided to try and save them. Around 1/3 of an estimated 270 pilot whales that became stranded on Australia's island state of Tasmania have died, with rescuers managing to return 25 to the sea in an ongoing operation, officials said Tuesday. The whales were discovered Monday on a beach and 2 sandbars near the west coast town of Strahan. 60 people have joined the rescue effort. We've rescued about 25 at the present time and escorted them out of the channel and out to sea, and crews are continuing to work so that number will increase before we get to the end of the day. Wildlife biologist Chris Carlison said progress would be slow. We'll take the animals with the best chance to start with and the ones that we are able to deal with. So, yeah, and then there's some images associated with it, and it's just amazing. It's like just a whole bay, or like it looks like a bay of just whale fins, just hundreds of them. It's really wild. Anyway, that's on France 24 if you want to look at the image, but it's just really shocking to see. All right, now let's talk about some more depressing news. This is from Reuters. Get serious. Careless French public riles COVID medics. This is from Marseille, France. David Fleurat, I guess it's probably not said that, but pronounced that way, but Fleurat, had almost cleared his Marseille hospital intensive care ward of COVID-19 patients during the summer lull in new cases. Now the private unit is filling fast again, and Fleurat can barely conceal his frustration. It's not doing our job that is tiring. What's tiring is a second wave because people do not respect social distancing. He's a managing director of the private clinic Bouchard Elsan told Reuters. Marseille is at the epicenter of a resurgent in novel coronavirus cases throughout France. Intensive care wards in the Mediterranean cities, public hospitals are full, and so hospitals like Fleurat's are handling the spillover. Some of France's biggest cities outside of Paris, include Marseille, Lyon, and Bordeaux, have imposed new restrictions in an attempt to slow the virus's spread and reduce the number of intensive care admissions. Some 638 COVID-19 sufferers were admitted into ICU over the past 7 days. So, and then it goes through and it talks, has a few quotes from a few other people that work at the hospital. But yeah, France is suffering as well. It just seems like all across the Western world, people are tired of following restrictions and just giving up. And then that's causing huge outbreaks that are going to kill a lot of people. It's really sad. Well, let's keep on going because guess what? People care even less in Madrid. This is from the World Socialist website. Madrid hospitals are collapsing amid the resurgence in Europe. 3 months after the Spanish government ended lockdowns, the resurgence of the virus is swamping Madrid's hospitals. Health authorities report 90% of beds in Madrid intensive care wards are occupied. 139 people died there last week. These events are a warning to workers across Europe and internationally. The premature ending of lockdowns is leading to catastrophe. In Spain, there have been 31,428 new cases found and 168 deaths just since Friday. In Madrid, the number of cases has been multiplied by 73. That's right, by 73 since July, rising from 9 to 659 per 100,000 inhabitants. Similar surges are taking place in every European country, and many European cities are only weeks behind Madrid in the spread of the virus. Working-class neighborhoods in the south of the city are hardest hit by the virus, with double average rates of infection. So, thoughts going out to them. And the last one we have, don't worry, it's not about COVID, but it's still tragedy. This is from Reuters. India building collapse, death toll climbs to 20, second day of search underway. We didn't get a chance to go into this yesterday, but Basically, rescue workers, well, the story is, rescue workers and sniffer dogs scoured the ruins of a collapsed apartment building looking for any sign of life on Tuesday, as the death toll climbed to 20, a day after the disaster struck Bhiwandi town of the northeast outskirts of Mumbai. There were no reliable estimates of the number of people who were still missing after the three-story building came down just before dawn on Monday, when many of the people in the 54 apartments would either be getting up for work or school or still in their beds. Satya Pradhan, the head of the National Disaster Response Force, tweeted an update on the search and rescue effort and a series of grim bullet points. 20 dead extracted, 20 rescued alive. Ops continue. The rescue work was being conducted in difficult and risky conditions. Emergency service workers were moving debris by hand or using digging equipment, but the building was located in a cramped alley, making it hard to bring in heavy lifting equipment. They're also contending with the risk of falling masonry as loose slabs hung from the walls and ceilings still left standing. It's unclear why the building collapsed, but such disasters are commonplace in India during the monsoon season, as torrential rains can destabilize old and often illegally constructed buildings. Last month, more than a dozen people were killed when a building collapsed in the industrial town of Mahad, 165 miles south. So, there's quite sad there. Question from Com: how many suicides in India? Let's ask. So it's India 2019. Let's see. In 2016, the number of suicides in India had increased to 230,314. Suicide was the most common cause of death in both the age groups of 15 to 29 years and 15 to 39 years. It's from our friends at Wikipedia. And to give us some context, in the USA, let's see, suicide in the USA, we've got, looks like we're in the tens of thousands. Yeah, in 2018, we had 48,344 recorded suicides. So if that gives you any perspective, you know, it's kind of the way it goes, right? It sucks. So anyway, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. So I'm not even going to, like, try and make it feel better. We're gonna listen to, oh, do I have that one? I bet you I do. August. Nope. Sorry, I was looking to see. I don't have the, I was looking to see if I had a Sublime song I was thinking of. Oh, I do. Perfect. All right. This is a callback to Better Times. This is April 29th, 1992. So, check it out. And greeting, Ixer. Thanks for tuning in. Or jumping into comm, anyway.
Yeah. I don't know if you can, but can you get an order for ONS?
That's O-N-S.
Junior Market. The address is 1934 East Anaheim. All the windows are busted out. And it's like a free-for-all here. And the owner should see it come down here. See if he can secure his business. If he wants
Black man, they said it was for the Mexican and not for the white man. But if you look at the fucked up beliefs. It's about coming up and staying on top and screaming 187 on a motherfucking cop. It's not in the paper, it's on the wall. National Guard, smoke from all around.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. Okay. I can lower. Oh, okay. Sure. Let me know. So we're going to keep on a rolling. I have, like usual, too many news stories to really fit in. We've got about 9, maybe 8.5 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. And I just got to say, I'm pretty excited because I ordered some Jinjin Mei and some Dahong Pao tea. I got 100 grams of Jinjin Mei and 50 grams of Dahong Pao. They both came in the mail yesterday. I'm very excited. I tried the Jinjin Mei, and it was good, but I didn't wash it. And, oh man, you got to wash your tea. So, anyway, be sure you wash your dried teas like that. No, I don't know why you gotta wash them, but every tea, if I order tea from China, I usually end up having to wash it. So I don't know. There's some rule that I don't know about. But anyway, let's on keep on going here. So this is from the BBC, and this kind of leads us in the UN General Assembly coverage. So this is only 2 hours old. U.S.-China tensions flare over coronavirus. So, tensions between the U.S. and China came to the fore of the annual UN General Assembly in New York, with Donald Trump blaming China for the spread of coronavirus. He called for China to be held accountable for the pandemic. In his speech, Chinese President Xi Jinping said his country had no intention to enter a Cold War with any country. Ties between the two world powers are strained on a number of fronts. This year's summit at New York is largely being held virtually, with world leaders providing pre-recorded speeches. The new format meant some of the geopolitical theater normally on offer at the key UN meeting was absent. Each country was represented by a single delegate, and there was little opportunity for one nation to rebut another. But as often is the case for speeches to the assembly, President Trump used his address to tout his achievements and tear into a rival. "We must hold accountable the nation which unleashed this plague to the world, China," he said. "In the earliest days of the virus, China..." Yeah, I'm not going to read his bullshit. Oh yeah, Tobe is here and plugging things in. Heck yeah. So President Trump went on to speak into a recording, played to an empty room. The story goes on. U.S. death toll for coronavirus is at more than 200,000. It's the highest in the world, and Trump has often downplayed the disease. Tensions are high between the U.S. and China and a number of other issues, including trade, technology, Hong Kong and China's treatment of Muslim minorities in Xinjiang province. Speaking soon after the U.S. leader, President Xi warned of the risks of clash of civilizations. "We'll continue to narrow differences and resolve disputes with others through dialogue and negotiation. We'll not seek to deploy ourselves or engage in zero-sum game," he said. So it's very exciting times there. All right, so I did want to mention this story because we're running low on time, but I felt this was important. So, we've got forced sterilization in the U.S. concentration camps on the border, and I guess we can all agree, yes, concentration camps are bad, the U.S. shouldn't be running them. Yes, forced sterilization's bad, and eugenics is bad, but I mean, the U.S. is doing it. It's okay then, right? Come on. But the U.S. isn't new to the forced sterilization game. We were doing it in all over the place until the 80s, and then people realized, oh, maybe we should stop that. But Democracy Now! Has a story. You can listen to it if you want. It's about an hour long, the show is. But basically, this is about California. It's titled Belly of the Beast, Survivors of Forced Sterilization in California's Prison Fight for Justice. So revelations about forced hysterectomies in the facility in Georgia have forced reckoning with the long history of sterilizations in the U.S., particularly of black, brown, poor, and disabled people, and the way this procedure is continued in jails and prisons to the present day. We speak with Kelly Dillon, who was sterilized at the Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla in 2001 and was featured in the documentary Belly of the Beast, which tells the stories of women subjected to unwanted sterilization behind bars in California. She says incarcerated women are punished for simply requesting medical records. If we begin to repress, we are reprimanded and sometimes put in lockdown, says Dillon, who in 2006 became the first survivor of sterilization abuse to sue the California Department of Corrections for damages. Between 2006 and 2010, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation sterilized nearly 150 women without required state approval. Forced sterilization is genocide, notes filmmaker Erica Cohn, who directed Belly of the Beast and spent nearly a decade making it. The film opens in theaters on October 16th and will premiere on PBS's Independent Lens on November 23rd. So, yeah, if you want to watch that, I'm going to put that on my calendar because this is just incredible. It's just so, it's very frustrating. It's sickening. But I mean, it's like the U.S. has lasted long enough to be the villain. Well, we've got about two minutes or so to go, so I'm just going to read the headlines now. As is the case, I often run out of time. Dissent magazine has a nice long article called "The Green New Deal's Public Infrastructure Should Be Funded by the Public," and it's an argument about why the Green New Deal is good and why it should be publicly funded. Labor Notes, you know, it's labornotes.org. Has an article about overturning austerity, 101. California's Prop 15 will tax the rich. It's about a proposition in California. It's up for vote. Independent has a headline, Facebook preparing for violent unrest after U.S. election. Yep, that's right. Facebook is preparing for the worst and is expecting, is planned for the U.S. to basically, plans have been drawn up for handling widespread civic unrest as well as the political dilemmas of contested election results. So, basically, Facebook's preparing to be ordered by whoever wins to silence the other people. And then this one was really great. The Progressive has an article called "Smartass Cripple, Waiting and Waiting for Social Security Disability." And it is pretty short, but basically, this guy's calling to create an absurdist play to go over what the U.S. Government Accountability Office report put out. The article is called Social Security Disability, Information on Wait Times, Bankruptcies, and Deaths Among Applicants Who Appealed Benefit Denials. And it's basically about how there's thousands of people who die every year waiting for their SSI applications or their benefits applications to be approved. And if you aren't feeling sad enough, politics in the U.S. is a mess. Police in Louisville were all their time off was canceled so that they could be there for something. They're planning something is expected to happen, but they don't know what, and they won't say what, and they won't say when. And one of the picks, at least one of the five that President Trump is possibly going to nominate for the Supreme Court, believes that poll taxes are constitutional. So. That would be great way to disenfranchise, you know, millions of people. Also, the Pentagon is funneling or embezzling money and sending it off instead of buying medical supplies, is just sending it to pay for defense contractors, and that's on Salon.com. It's just, everything is it's not even a hot mess, it's just a flaming mess. And just the last word here, the CDC is asking Americans to please avoid trick-or-treating or indoor holiday parties. Dubious Goals Committee with Tobes coming up, and it's going to be so good, so definitely tune in.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. And every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.